Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of Refresh Your Wealth. Excited to be here with you. My name's Mark Kohler, and I've got my amazing co-host, Matt Sorensen, on the line.
Yeah, baby.
That's your cue.
Okay. I try to come in there with some, you know, some positivity.
Yeah,
peace, love, and positivity.
Good stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well, okay. So excited about today's show. This is good stuff. And what we're going to do here is make a few disclaimers. First of all, if you're here in maybe one of our first time listeners, this open forum show is done live. We've got a call in number and we've taken email questions. We got a bunch of them. And so this is not edited after the fact. This is legit. This is where we're at here. And so
clearly,
you might feel it's
clearly, yeah, if you're listening to this.
Yeah, you can tell it's a little more ghetto. So anyway, we're going live. I also want to point out, I'm in the studio now. We've got a small technical issue. At 15 minutes into the show, we're going to have to re-queue it up. And so for anybody listening live, I apologize to inconvenience you. You'll have to just call right back into the same number. If you're listening live, if you're on your computer, you can just log right back in and continue to listen on your computer. But it was set for a 15-minute queue rather than an hour queue, and we've never had that happen before. So anyway, so we've got a small technical difficulty. So at that point, when that comes in the show, we'll just re-queue it up, and then we'll get our full hour. We've got a lot of questions today to cover, so it's exciting. Matt, any current events?
Cool.
Anything you want to talk about? Anything exciting before we get into our Q&A? I don't know.
Current events. Man, I don't even know what's going on in the world anymore. Like politics, sports. Dude, I am so out of the loop on everything. I'm just like, if it's tax and legal, self-directed retirement accounts, I mean, I know what's up, but everything else, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I had a friend yesterday that's like, they were like, do you see all that stuff in Venezuela? I'm like, what's going on in Venezuela? I was like, yeah, you see what happened on
it's like World Cup on or something?
Code?
Or yeah, World Cup going? I don't know.
We just read the tax court news and anything that's tax related or asset protection, we're hearing it. But
yeah, I know the IRS released some updates on opportunity zone, you know, regulations. That was pretty exciting. So about 10 days ago. So, but got the world of sports. I don't even know what's going on right now. Like the baseball playing, I guess the NBA playoffs. Every team in Arizona is awful right now. So like we're not in the playoffs in anything. Hockey. Basketball. I mean, like the worst team in the league in the NBA. Anyways, so yeah, there's a reason I don't follow the sports world right now. It's depressing if you're from Arizona.
I like it. I like it. Well, it makes sense. We're geeks. We're here for you. So thank you for listening, everybody. Today's show, we don't do a tax or legal tip per se. We're going to just jump right into your Q&A. And for questions that we're not able to get to, we actually have a team meeting with all of our lawyers every Wednesday after our podcast radio show. So this is kind of fun where today we're going to divvy out any questions we weren't able to get to and ask our attorneys to give a quick response and give maybe a link to a video or an article or try to answer your question as best they can. And so we hope many of you find it satisfactory that if we didn't get to cover your question on the show, you'll get some sort of answer from our attorneys to help point you in the right direction. Many of you may need, even after our show today, a consultation. If you don't have a local attorney or accountant you trust, don't feel like they have to be down the street. They can be across the country, and we're here for you if you need us. So we'd love to have a phone call with webcam or something. Matt, I want to share my acorn tip. I've really got to do it. I'm so excited about this.
Okay. All right.
I know this is a pain for you, but it's
okay. Today's show brought to you by Acorn.
Acorns. It's acorns with an S.
Acorns. Oh, okay. Yeah, we want more than one, acorns. Obviously, clearly.
Yeah, you want lots of little acorns.
Nobody's retiring on one acorn. Okay.
That's right. Okay, now everybody, if this is your one takeaway today, I'm serious. Everybody listening today, you are going to freaking love this. In fact, you've got to maybe share this podcast with your friends or family or someone if you find this helpful. Okay, here's the premise. We as Americans, now there's several premises here that really play into this. We as Americans are terrible at saving. Generally around the world, first world countries especially, we're not great at saving. We just don't have good habits of this. We are known as the consumers of the world. Ship it to the U.S., some bozo will buy it. That's kind of how it works. The second premise is addictions in America are rampant. Almost in every aspect of life. It is sad. I mean, whether it's drugs, shopping, hoarding, porn, gaming, everything. There's a lot of addictions out there. I was reading a really interesting article in Time Magazine where they talked about the chemicals and endorphins that are released through addictive behavior. And one of these is gaming. Gaming on our phones and video games, and these games release these endorphins that kids especially are addicted to, and many adults, they're gamers. Okay, so these are two premises. Well, with that in mind, this new company has come out with an app called Acorns, and they're taking an app and making it addictive to save, which again, remember, we're bad at saving and we get very addicted to things. So I love what they've done. With Acorns, you get an app on your phone and you can tie it to your bank account. And as you save, it gives you a ping and it kind of gets you addicted to savings and you get excited about it. Now, there's three ways why Acorns work. And there's some other apps out there. Stash is another good one. And if some of you have heard about this, you may go, well, Mark, you're not doing it justice. Well, be patient. But if you haven't heard of this, this is pretty revolutionary. All of my millennial kids are into it. And they're like, Dad, you got to get on board. And in the last month or two, I have loved this. So anyway, in summary, everybody, I'll just summarize it, Matt. This is so good. You can go onto your Acorns app, set it up on your phone, tie it to a bank account, and you can set up your Acorns as a Roth IRA. Now you've got this little Roth IRA in your phone. And there's three ways you can grow it. Number one, you can transfer $5 a week, $10 a week, $50 a week out of sight, out of mind. You just program your bank account to just drop $10 a week into your Roth IRA. And a lot of us, we've got crap hitting our bank account every day, every week. We don't even track. So this will just happen and you're like, okay, out of sight, out of mind. Number two, you can do roundups. So every time you go to the store and you buy something, it'll round it up to the nearest dollar, and that change goes automatically into your Roth IRA. So you're building your Roth IRA while you buy things. And so 782 or 725 at Starbucks goes up to $8. You just drop 75 cents in your Roth IRA. Third are partners and growing your money through buying things. So you can go onto one of their partners and buy something, and they'll put money into your Roth IRA. Home Depot is a classic one. I can go on to onlinehomedepot.com, pick up supplies for my home or my rehab or my rental property, and 5% of my purchase goes into my Roth IRA. Home Depot gives you 5% back on your purchase and drops it into your Roth IRA. Now, what's cool here is once you – and you can choose your fund of how you want to invest your Roth. Once it gets to $1,000, you transfer it over to directed IRA. So now you've got your self-directed Roth getting $1,000 kicked into it once you hit it. And so I've started this, Matt, and I've just been messing around with it. And just in the last 3 weeks, I've dropped like $300 into my Roth IRA. And I haven't even watched, and I get this little ping, and I'm like addicted to this stuff. And now I'm building my Roth. I can self-direct it, and I've got all my kids doing it. I'm just stoked. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, man, it's pretty cool.
You're not that excited about it?
I'm like, how are you going right into a Roth or backdoor Roth, hopefully. But yeah, I mean I have a number of thoughts, but even me, like, you know, when I heard about just self-directing in general, it's like, you can't just like start from scratch. Like you can't just start self-directing like today. So a lot of people have no money in a retirement account. So what do? You got to get on the path. Get on the path. You got to start doing something now. Start putting the money away now, because you'll be saying the same dang thing in 5-10 years. I don't have money to get started. Okay, well, you got to start putting it away. That's what I did, you know, 10 years ago. It's like, all right, I'm going to max it out every year. Then I'll have enough. And it took me about 3 years till I could do my first deal that's what is self-directed. And so like what you said, Mark, build it up. Once you have enough, then you can transfer it over to the self-directed account and start investing. But this is an easy way. I do love the concept, and it is kind of one of those things that's just – it automates it. You don't have to set the money aside. You don't have to come up with $6,000 in one lump sum. It just starts partitioning the money and sending it away to save. So I do love it.
Yeah.
I mean, don't mistake my slow response there coming in as is not an endorsement. So I endorse Acorns. I'm for it. Just for the record, I just want to say that.
All right.
And for the voters out there,
we'll start diving into a bunch of questions here. Let me just say one last thing. What was kind of clunky is when you set this up on your phone, you've got to make sure you choose the right bank accounts as you're trying to do this roundups and transfers. And I recommend you do it on a desktop, because if you do it on your phone, there's delays and it can kind of be a little clunky. Luckily for me, it was great. Matt and I are partners, and so we share several bank account links. What was perfect for me is my Acorn started taking money out of Matt's accounts. And so it was perfect.
Yeah.
You didn't think I was going to actually admit that on the air, did you?
I did not think you were going to come clean on that. That's right. This is why I don't love Acorns. I was like, what the heck is this? It's like, is this 85 cents here, a dollar there? What's going on? Yeah.
Oh, I'm not kidding people. It was so funny. Matt called me up like 2 weeks into this. He's like, what the hell is Acorns? It keeps hitting my account for like 20 cents, 80 cents, and 50 bucks. And I'm like, huh, that's interesting. I'm building Acorns.
Yeah. You're just like that little squirrel going to take Acorns from one guy's stack of Acorns over to his own.
Yeah. Matt's like,
devious squirrel. This is great.
Yeah. So if you want to build your Acorns faster, tap into your, you know, friends or family's account. So you're going to love it. All right, everybody. Okay. Now we've got people that have questions, and we're going to do this now. We're going to reset this call right now. And I apologize for those that are called in and you just got here. We're having technical difficulties in the studio, and so we have to reset the show for just 1 minute. So if you've called in, let me give you the call-in number again. It is 646-668-8326. Let me repeat that. 646-668-8326. If you have a question for as a live caller, press the number 1 when you get back in, and give us 1 minute, and we're going to have the show rolling again, and then we're going to burn through as many questions as we can here, people. Thanks for your time.
Hey, everybody, we're back, and I'm going to take the fall here. You know, I'll fall on the sword here. We just had a few technical difficulties today, and so we're not going to be able to take live callers the rest of the show, but we're going to take a little extra time and get into as many of the email questions we can, and for those that are live callers, don't give up on us. Next open forum, call in again. We'll be there for you. We haven't had this technical problem ever in 10 years of broadcasting the live show. So we appreciate your patience. Matt, are you in a forgiving mood? You're okay?
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of a co-conspirator, I guess. So I forgive. Sorry, everybody. But hey, we always have more email questions than we can get through anyways. So this is just a gift, actually, you know, to those who take the time to type up an email and send it in. This is for you.
Okay. Well, let's dive into it. And yeah. As some of you may have noticed, we cut up the first of the show a little bit to save time so that we're not too verbose, even though I gave my acorns tip. So, all right, Matt, do you want to go with our first question? I've been talking too much today already.
All right. I got a question from Jamie. And Jamie, I'm just going to warn you, Jamie wants me to get in a fight with Robert Kiyosaki. So Jamie says, I'm trying to understand something. I heard Robert Kiyosaki recommend against buying real estate in an IRA because you lose the ability to depreciate the asset. I've also heard you recommend buying real estate in your IRA. Why do you have a different opinion? All right, Jamie, good question. Now, there's a lot of people who will crap on your IRA owning real estate. Let me tell you why I still think your IRA should own real estate. I don't buy investment real estate property because I can depreciate it. It's kind of like I don't eat Chinese food because I want a fortune cookie at the end. Like, I'm there for the regular meal. It's like when I buy real estate in an IRA, I'm buying it because I think it's a good investment. It's going to create good cash flow. It's going to appreciate. And I'd rather own real estate and I think it's going to perform better and make me more money and grow my account better than the crappy mutual fund I've been in for 10 years earlier. So that's why I'm still a fan of buying real estate in an IRA. And remember, the IRA is just an account. It's a tax preferred account. I don't pay taxes when I make money in that account. So why do I want depreciation? What, I can't use the depreciation to offset any taxable income because I have zero taxable income in the retirement account as I'm making money. So I wouldn't get too caught up in that. Now, some people say, well, should I buy real estate in my personal name and my IRA? Both. That's what I do. I like real estate. I own some of my personal name, many different rental properties or investments. I also own real estate in my retirement account. So, but it's because of the returns I can get. I just feel like with the money in my retirement account, I can grow it better with real estate if I'm finding good real estate deals. Now, you can find a crappy real estate deal just like you can find a crappy mutual fund. So you still got to find a good real estate deal.
Yeah. I would just want to echo what Matt said. He stole my thunder because I was waiting to come in and say that
you I just tagged you in. Okay. Robert Kiyosaki's still in the ring. I just tagged you in. You can body slam him now.
I'm just going to come throw my body slam. I just want to echo what you're saying. I'm going to say it more distinctly in two ways. Number one, you want to find the best investment you can for your IRA. If that is real estate, and your ROI, your return on investment, when you do the math, is better than a mutual fund of 5 to 7 or 8%. Why not? Who cares if the depreciation is lost? And number two, I want to buy rental property in both my own name and in my IRA because they're both good reasons to do it in both buckets. So in my new book, The Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom, I talk about having multiple buckets gathering rain. And these are two different types of buckets, almost like on two different sides of the house. You know, the rain may fall more over here or more over there one day or whatever the case may be. And so I want to have two buckets building me wealth and gathering rain. And so that is frustrating to hear Robert Kiyosaki say that because he's a smart guy. I don't know. I don't want to pontificate on why they say what they say. And I'll probably end up saying something rude and get in trouble. So I'll just leave it alone and say, people, your depreciation is still going to be actually captured. It's going to be tracked inside your IRA. Because if you're leveraging your IRA, that depreciation becomes a write-off for UBIT or UDFI down the road. So don't think all is lost. Get the best return you can with your IRA.
Yeah. And I'll just say quite honestly, I mean, I'll throw a punch. I don't think Robert Kiyosaki is as well educated on this as we are, just being honest. I mean, he's got a lot of great information and rich dad, poor dad principles are awesome. We do like those, but I just don't think he's gotten up to speed on this. I think he's relied on other people's opinions. So, okay.
I got a question.
Okay.
This is from Steve. Steve said, This is an HSA question for health savings accounts, and this is a good one, people. He says, I owe $1,600 in medical bills, but only $1,000 going into my HSA this year. Can I pay off the medical bills this year and then with cash and then pay myself back with the HSA funds next year? Well, Steve, you could, but I've got a better idea. Everybody listening, remember, an HSA is like an IRA for healthcare. Now, what Steve's probably talking about here is he has an HSA at work and they're putting $1,000 in his HSA. Well, Steve, he qualifies for an HSA or his employer wouldn't have given one him in the first place. So he can go open up a second HSA anywhere he wants and put his own money in it. So he's got $1,000 going into his HSA at work. He could have a second HSA down the street at a bank or even over at Directed IRA and drop $1,000 into his HSA somewhere else and then pay for your medical bills out of that HSA. So Steve, what I'm saying is stop by your HSA account on the way to the doctor's office, put the money in and pay for the medical bills this year out of a second HSA. Now you get the write-offs this year. And the $1,000 next year could reimburse you for other things out of pocket or just grow. So don't think, I guess the big takeaway for everybody here is don't think that you're stuck with one HSA account. What you're stuck with is how much you can put in a given year. And whether you're single or married, and that's going to be, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. And so you've got all sorts of options to have multiple HSAs. So don't feel like you have to wait, Steve. You can put the money in a new HSA and pay for it now rather than pay yourself back later. Anyway, I hope that makes sense. It's tricky.
Awesome. All right. Is that my tagged back in?
Yes, sir. I'm tagging you, baby.
I don't know. What wrestler would you be? I think I'd be Ultimate Warrior. Would you be Hulk Hogan or Randy Macho Man Savage? I don't know.
The Rock.
The Rock. Okay. Yeah. All right, this question's from Terry. Terry's got a great question on asset protection. He has a number of properties. He manages 55 doors, that's rentals, and he's increasing this to up to 200 by the end of the year. He uses a Series LLC in Illinois. He's in Illinois. Illinois is one of about, 15, 20 states now that allows for a Series LLC, which is one major LLC, and then it has each little subsidiaries or baby LLCs or series LLCs that own individual properties. This is called a series LLC. This question is, he set up the properties in different between the series. He's got 8 of them, and these are apartment complexes and some single family homes. Now he says he was told he needed to have one bank account for each series. But then he was later told that he actually doesn't need to have a bank account for each series. He could just have one bank account for all series combined. And as long as he kept separate financials, which he says he can do, he keeps separate financials for the properties. So his question is, do I need to have a separate bank account for each series, or is it enough that I'm at least tracking separate financials? Now, I've got some opinions on this. You want me to go first, Mark?
Yeah, go for it. I love it.
Okay. Series LLCs are pretty untested in the courts right now. There hasn't been a lot of case law on them. We're very confident you're going to get separate liability protection, but the guidance is that you should not only have separate financial records, but that you should hold assets separately. Now that means a couple things to me. First, I want those separate properties. So like series one, you got 8 properties, let's say, and series one has, 3 of those. We want all 3 of those properties to be deeded into series one. I also want a bank account for series one because that cash that's being made and those expenses on the property, though that cash and that money in the bank account is an asset of series one and the properties that series one owns. So my recommendation is to have a separate bank account for each series. I don't think financials is enough. It might be. You might be able to show, hey, I did track this separate. We kept separate records and financials. But if you're in court and you're trying to maintain the series and the asset protection of it, you'd rather have a bank account. I know it's a hassle. But I think that's meeting the statute's guidelines when it says holding assets separately.
Okay. Now, here's another perspective, and we get to a question from Lindsay here about project funding and the corporate veil. So I'm going to use my response as a transition to this next question as well. Everybody listening, asset protection is a big deal. And we want to protect ourselves from these projects we're doing with the LLCs or corporations. That's why we're doing it. And so when we use a series LLC, the goal is in these 15 or so states that allow for it, is you've got separate entities for holding these separate properties. You can't just say, oh, I filed a series LLC and and I've got these series and you've got to treat them like separate LLCs. The beauty of the series is that it's cheaper. You don't have to go out and set up a new LLC every time. You can just do some internal documents and have a series LLC. That's why you do it. It's not to cut corners on banking or titling the property or a set of books or having the lease agreement reflect the different names. And when you do a series LLC, well, with us, we walk you through all those little steps. And is it a little more efficient? Yes. Does it save you some more money? Absolutely. Is a series LLC a good idea? Sure. When you're in a state that allows for series LLCs and you've got 5 to 10 properties, they're the way to go. Absolutely the way to go. But does it give you license to throw all of this housekeeping out the window? It doesn't. You're still going to have to do a little bit of housekeeping. And we'll walk you through it. So Lindsay, this next question that comes up, he said, he has got equity in multiple properties in his personal name and in rental LLC. And he wants to strip some money out and go do a fix and flip. And he says, am I going to threaten my asset protection by pulling equity out of one property that's in an LLC and putting it into another LLC? Or it just seems, the gist of Lindsay's question is, do I destroy the autonomy and protection when I start moving equity to go to another LLC? The answer is no, as long as you do good housekeeping. And that's why these questions are related. So if I've got ABC LLC and XYZ LLC, so I have two LLCs, one holds rental properties, one is doing my fix and flips, let's say. Can I take equity out of ABC LLC property and go deposit it in the bank account of the other LLC and do a fix and flip? Sure. As long as the accountant knows how you did it and why, you did not break down the asset protection. You still have corporate asset protection. What we want to make sure is that those LLCs own each properties, the contracts reflect the names of each LLC, and that if you move money from one to another, you just do the right journal entry and your accountant gets it. So with a little bit of accounting and a little bit of housekeeping, Lindsay, you are on your right path. Let's borrow money from one property to push it into another LLC and do another project over there. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you do good bookkeeping and we can make sense of what you're doing. If you commingle too much and you're getting too crazy at Home Depot with debit cards and back and forth and everywhere, you're going to lose that veil. So a little bit of housekeeping can go a long way. We have accountants that can help you with that. We can walk you through the steps and you can do it yourself for sure. Just be on top of it. Mm-hmm. Anything on that asset protection too that I may have said that got you?
Yeah. I think one thing just keep in mind between the two entities, ABC, let's say owning the rentals where you're stripping the equity out, and XYZ, which is maybe doing the flip, is don't go from ABC to XYZ directly, typically. Generally, the common ownership there is you. You own ABC, you own XYZ. So if you're stripping equity out of ABC, that money goes from the ABC bank account to you personally. And then you contribute that cash you have now personally into XYZ. And so you've got some debt you acquired now in ABC. It's not necessarily income just because you pulled money out. You know, you created some debt there. And now you've put new capital contribution into XYZ. That would kind of be standard way. It doesn't have to be done that way, but that's kind of, that'd be the common way to paper that. So, all right, I got a question from PL if you want to move on to cryptocurrency.
Ooh, I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Woo. All right. PL, I don't know if this is a nickname or I'm going to keep you anonymous. So I'm just going to go with PL. He also says, set up an IRA with Directed IRA. Thank you for being a customer. And the law firm did his LLC. He's asking about investing in cryptocurrency. PL says, I have a Coinbase account in my personal name. However, how can I start using the LLC? He says at Coinbase, they have an institutional funding threshold amount that his LLC may not qualify for as being an institutional account. So questions are coming in about how do I basically do this between where I already have a personal Coinbase account and I need an account for the LLC. This is a great question. I have some videos on this, on how to invest in cryptocurrency with a self-directed IRA. There's a couple moving parts. The first thing, Coinbase is not great for institutional accounts. I'm just going to say that. I have a Coinbase account personally. I have a Coinbase account from back in the day that my LLC linked to my retirement account owns. It had to go institutional through Gemini at the time. I don't even know what Coinbase is doing now for institutional accounts. I just hear feedback from clients. It's kind of a pain in the butt. What most clients have used instead of Coinbase for crypto, using an LLC, for example, an IRA LLC, is they have used Binance. That's Binance, Binance. There's also one called ItBit. There's some others out there, but Binance is probably the biggest in terms of crypto. They have all sorts of different crypto on there too, more than you can see at Coinbase or exchange on Coinbase. So I would check out Binance. You have same process there. You need to do a business or institutional account there. You upload your LLC information. Now, all these institutions now are getting hounded by the IRS and the banking regulators and everybody. So they are going to follow what's called the Know Your Customer laws, which PL mentioned here, the KYC. They'll need to verify who is this, because the regulators are all freaked out in cryptocurrency that it's a bunch of criminals out there, you know, or foreigners or something. And they're going to take over America or infiltrate our financial system or there's just something shady going on. So they want to know who's behind this account. So you can identify as being the responsible person behind the account. This is my IRA that I'm the beneficiary of, and give your social. Just make sure that it's clear the account's in the LLC's name, it's linked to your LLC's bank account, and that your tax ID for your LLC is what's used for tax reporting purposes. So as long as you do that, you should be fine with the trading or exchanging crypto with your IRA LLC.
Okay, I like it. Cryptocurrency is so fascinating. I know some of you think it's just a joke and a waste. Other people believe it's going to be the future of the world. Who knows? Whew, boy,
yeah,
it's tricky. Yeah. Okay, this is Doug from Wisconsin. Says, thanks always for the great info you put out. Thanks so much, Doug. Says, we met in Chicago and he's saying a few things about it, he and his wife. Then he said, just start reading questions here. He goes, my question is the most tax advantageous way to put money in a college fund when we know it'll be pulled out in the next 6 to 12 months to pay tuition. Basically, we need more in our daughter's fund as her chosen school is more expensive than we plan. So is there a better, a more tax advantageous way to pay this? Should we use a 529 or something else rather than just write a tuition check out of our regular checkbook? Okay. I've got an answer for Doug and then for everybody else that may not be in the 11th hour, because that's where Doug's at. His and I've got kids in college too, so I know the feeling. And I've got a plan for you, Doug. So Doug's in the 11th hour. His kids are in college now. And in the next 12 months, he's going to need some money for tuition because he's made that commitment to help him with tuition. Some parents don't do much for their kids in school. Some do too much, whatever. And we're not going to judge Doug for this. He's helping his daughter out with tuition. So what's the plan? So the short answer is, Doug, there's nothing really you can do from a tax preferred account like a 529 or a Coverdell in the next 12 months, that's going to do much for you. Now, I've got a comment for some of you out there that have maybe 6 to 12 years to play with here, but Doug's dealing with 6 to 12 months. So anybody out there in this kind of 11th hour situation, and here's what I do. I just pay my kids out of my business, a 1099, for helping me in my business, and let them pay the tuition. So Doug, think deep here for a minute. And anybody in this 11th hour, don't pay your kids' tuition. don't think you're going to get a tax write-off to pay your kids' tuition. You're not. Pay your kids for helping you in your business and send them a 1099. And make sure they're legitimately on the board of advisors, board of directors. They've got a role to play. Now you've just moved money into their tax bracket, which may not even be taxed up to it. It's not going to be up to a certain point. And you're going to be in a much bigger tax or higher tax bracket. So shift money into their tax return and let them pay their own tuition. So that's what I do now. So if you're up against the wall, it's the 11th hour. Don't even think 529 or Coverdell. Just put the kids on the board of directors, get them a 1099, take a tax write-off, and help them do their own tax return, and you're going to save taxes by shifting. Now, for anybody else listening, and you've got 6 to 12 years to play with, the 529 is an option for you. You can put a lot of money in there, and it grows tax deferred, but you don't control the investment, and 529 returns are at best 5% or something. They're not great. What I love is the Coverdell and a Roth IRA. Now, here's why. First, help your kids start a Roth IRA, again, by compensating them through your business. Fund a Roth IRA and let it grow. Go for it. Now, what's nice is when they get to college, you can pull out all the contributions you made tax-free, penalty-free for college. So putting in that money every year, you'll get to pull it back out. But the growth, the rate, the returns you're having will continue to grow. And you can't pull those out. There'd be a penalty in tax for that. But you can pull out your contributions. With a Coverdell IRA in combination with a Roth IRA, you might be able to do some LLC investing. And over the next 6 to 12 years, the Coverdell, you can pull out for college, contributions and growth. The Roth IRA, contributions. So I like that because you control the investments and you can get a lot better return than 5 or 6 or 7%. So for you parents with younger children, that's the route to go. For some of you like me, where we're at death's door, just give me 1099 and do best you can.
Yeah. Another idea on that is, you know, with the economy being better, we're starting to see more teenagers get jobs, right? And so maybe your kids in high school age are getting a summer job and they're making, you know, maybe $5,000 over the summer, something like that. That allows them, they're going to get a W-2 for $5,000. Now they may be using that money to go have a good summer, or they're saving for something, or maybe they bought a car or something. You know, they're kind of doing these high school age things, which are great things for, you know, kids to be doing. But they've got a $5,000 W-2 maybe. Throw some money into their Roth IRA for them. And that could be used for college. Maybe they do great. They get scholarships. You don't even need to pull it out. But you can pull it out, that $5,000, and it's a great savings tool. Gets them started on a Roth IRA early. So I had a client talk about that who was like, I don't have a business. I can't really do this. But they had the money they wanted to set aside for the kids, and their kids were working, and it was a great kind of solution. Just like, we can still do it. You don't have to have a business. Just, the kids got a summer job. They got a W-2, man. They just need help getting some money in.
I love it. And just as a practical example that might blow some of your guys' mind, we live what we're teaching here. I'm not kidding. Literally during this show, while Matt was giving one of the responses to your questions, my daughter texts me, who's in high school, and said, Dad, can I have some money for lunch? Will you put money on my account? I went online, transferred from my corporation to my little family management company that pays my daughter, who's under age 18, for helping in the business. I just gave her some money for school lunch, transferred it from my corporation to the sole proprietorship into her account. I just got a tax write-off for her going to lunch with her friends. And she doesn't pay taxes this year on the first $12,200. That's her standard deduction working for McDonald's or me. And then as she ran out the door just yesterday, I said, you got to come by the office. I need some help over there. You got to shred some paper and stuff some envelopes. She's like, okay. And so this is how it works. Your business hires your children so that you quit giving them money. Let your business give them money. Hmm. And I literally just did this during the show. Yeah. I literally just did it during the show.
Yeah. Sorry. All right. I got to. Like a kind of a segue here on the Roth IRA, which just came up. Kristen asked a question about a Roth IRA saying, I had a Roth IRA account opened in 2015, but I'm opening another Roth IRA at a different place. how do I make sure they have the correct date for the 5-year rule so I can pull out money from the Roth IRA tax-free? So this is an important rule to understand with the Roth IRA. As we've talked about in that last example, is when you put money into a Roth IRA and you pull it out, you can always pull out the money you put in. So if I put $5,000 into the Roth IRA or $6,000 into the Roth IRA for my annual contribution, and I want to pull the $6,000 out next month, fine. You take out what you put in, no tax, no penalty. But let's say I put in $6,000. Now that $6,000 is worth $8,000. I can pull out the $6,000, but if I want to pull out the other two, I have to be 59 and a half and I have to have had one Roth IRA account open for at least 5 years. If I've met those two requirements, the 5-year rule and 59 and a half, I can pull out that investment growth, the 2000 part, without penalty or tax. So that's what Kristen's asking about. Now, you can have 100 Roth IRA accounts. The only start date that matters is the first Roth IRA you had. So in Kristen's situation, she had a Roth IRA in 2015. So in 2020, and assuming Kristen's 59 and a half, or will be in 2020, she can pull out all the investment gains and returns in all Roth IRAs she has without any tax, totally tax-free.
Woo! I love it. Ah, I love it. Good job, man. All right. Okay, we've got a question here. This is from Dennis. He says, now, this is not an IRA question, believe it or not. He starts out that way, but everybody on the show, you're going to want to know this. He says, in a self-directed IRA where I have a contractor doing some remodeling to one of my properties the IRA owns, do I have to send to the contractor a 1099? Well, Dennis, and everybody listening, if you've got a rental property, a business, and you hire a contractor to design a website or do remodeling, whatever it is, if you paid them more than $600, you've got to send them a W-9, find out if they're a corporation, have them fill it out and sign it. And if they are exempt, you don't have to send a 1099. But if they are not exempt, yes, you send a 1099. Now, I have an article for this on paying subcontractors on the blog. And you can email me, mark@markjkohler.com, and say mark@markjkohler.com, and then just say, hey, I need that article, can't find it on your blog or whatever, and we'll send it to you. But anybody out there with a small business, whenever you hire someone, before you pay them, have them fill out a W-9. People do this to me all the time. They're like, Mark, I need you to fill out a W-9. No problem. And as soon as they find out, depending on how they're paying us, if we're a corporation, they don't have to. But we get 1099s in our law firm all the time because law firms are not exempt. So we fill out our W-9, we get a 1099. That's cool. But when you pay people out of your primary home or residence to just come fix your dishwasher, you don't have to 1099 them because you're not trying to write it off. It's just your personal home. So even if you have a self-directed IRA, an LLC, a corporation, whatever, if you have a business, even owned by your self-directed IRA, and you have a contractor work for you, have them fill out a W-9, and then follow the rules. If you do not issue a 1099, the penalties are terrible. They are absolutely atrocious. So follow the rules. Okay, Matt, I don't know if I lost you.
That was a little. The 1099 is always like, oh, dang, it's a little scary. Especially when you know they are atrocious.
Atrocious. That was my mom talking. Atrocious. Shut the front door. My mom would always say, I'm so mad I could spit. I'm like, that's okay. Go ahead and spit, Mom. I'm all right.
Yeah. Just
she'd say that all the time. I'm so mad I could spit. I'm like, that's pretty mad.
Mark's like, oh, crap. What'd I get caught for this time? All right. This is a question from Gustavo. Gustavo says, I have a self-directed IRA. Lots of IRA questions. I'm just reading what I get. I'm like Ron Burgundy, okay? You send me IRA questions, I'm reading IRA questions. I'm just reading what's on here, okay? You don't like them, don't send them. Send something else. Just reading what I get, okay? I tend to like it, so I'm happy over here. all right, so I was looking to invest in a real estate syndication with a self-directed IRA and learned about UBIT, UDFI. which, by the way, if you're investing in a real estate syndication, many of those deals are leveraged with debt. There are some that aren't, by the way. There's a company, Mill Creek Commercial. There's some other places out there that are real estate syndicators that do no debt deals. They like those just from an investment philosophy, and they really do attract IRA investors. So there are other options out there where you can just invest in real estate syndications, Gustavo, that are no debt deals. But anyways, let's say you still want, you want the specific syndication you want to do is has debt. So he says, I've heard that I can invest with a solo K. He says, but I plan to borrow $50,000 to invest in the syndication from the solo K. Says it seems that a QRP, what some people call a solo K, is very similar to a solo K, if not the same thing. All right, now let me dig into that. Yes, if you hear the word QRP, that is usually someone trying to sell a solo K that doesn't want to call it a solo K because they don't want you to compare it to a solo K, but it's a solo K. Yeah. I don't know how else
it's, to say. Yeah, it's you want a QRP. Yeah, and they're trying to make themselves sound really cool so they can charge you more. Just, yeah. It's a solo K, people.
They're like, it's RC Cola. It's Cola? It's RC Cola. Can I just have a Coke? I just, you know, it's the same dang thing. Okay, they're just putting a fancy little name on it to confuse you. Okay, so it's a solo 401k, what most people in the industry and really what the IRS will refer to this. Because a QRP, by the way, could include many things. That just means qualified retirement plan. That could be a pension plan. That could be a cash balance plan. That could be sometimes even an IRA falls under a QRP definition in certain sections of the tax code. The problem is we see most people using it as a definition for solo K. All right, so let's say you're doing a solo K though, Gustavo. And you plan to borrow $50,000. Now, this is where I get confused. A solo K, one of the benefits of any employer-based plan like a 401k, solo K, pension plan, is they don't pay UDFI on leveraged real estate deals like this. So this is UDFI is this tax. If you leverage an investment with debt, like, you know, you buy a piece of real estate with a mortgage with a retirement account, IRAs have to pay this tax called UDFI. Solo 401ks are exempt from that, as are other employer-based plans. So you could just do that directly out of the solo K. The $50,000 borrow thing is a whole nother thing with a solo K that you could do also, but I wouldn't mix these two together. I just invest right out of the solo K into the leveraged real estate deal, and you'd be exempt from UDFI. Now, you could also take a loan. That's a benefit of a solo K. You can loan yourself money from a solo K, half the balance not to exceed 50 grand, and you can use the money for whatever the heck you want. Personally, you could invest it into something. You can start a new business with it. You could go to Vegas and bet it all on black, try and double your money, whatever. You can do whatever smart or dumb things you want when you loan money out of your own 401k. Now, you got to pay it back over 5 years. So there's some other things on that. But I've got a whole chapter in my book, by the way, the Self-Directed IRA Handbook on solo Ks. It's 52 pages. It's pretty extensive and goes through all these different strategies and things to consider, the loan issue, the no UDFI, how it's different from an IRA. It's not for everyone, but Gustavo, you might want to look into that. Just keep in mind, if you're sitting there thinking, great, a solo K sounds great. Well, it only works if you're self-employed with a real business and no other employees. So just keep in mind, self-employed, no other employees. Then you can do, besides you, spouse, partners. But if you hit that you're a good candidate for a solo K.
All right. I've great comments, man. All right. We've got a question here from Ryan. And this is good for, again, a lot of people out there, very generic. He says, I want to invest in rental property with multiple investors. Now, I'm going to truncate his question here a little bit in a different order. One thing he says in here is, I've been really successful with a couple rental properties, and my friends and these people have seen him, and they said, Ryan, we want to invest with you, you know? And so that's what happens, believe it or not, folks. As you start having success in real estate and rental properties, people come out of the woodwork and they want to invest with you. I know some of you are so frustrated because you can't find the money. Once you start showing you know what you're doing, money comes out of the woodworks. It really does. So this is what's happened to Ryan. He's like, I want to do, and there now I'm going to read his exact question. And I'm going to, there's a huge warning here, a red flag. He says, I have a handful of investors who would like to invest in real estate, but want me to source the properties, purchase and rent them out. Could I form a company and have them invest money into the company, buy properties, and pay them a percentage of the monthly cash flow? The way you've defined it, Ryan, no, you're going to get in trouble because you used the I word. If you start going, I'm going to get investors and I'm going to have them invest with me and I'm going to pay them a percentage. What you've done is created a security. And under the Securities and Exchange Commission, you just became Bernie Madoff. You made promises and you better follow through or you're going to jail. And I'm not kidding, Ryan, go to jail. So let me reframe your question the way I would love you to say it. Hey, Mark, I have some friends and people that have money, saw me invest in real estate, and they really like what I'm doing. Could they partner with me? And we could form an LLC and they put in some money and I manage the project and maybe put a little money in too. And we all partner in an LLC where I give them regular updates and they have access to the books and they see and help make decisions with me on big decisions and they partner and we share profits. Ryan, absolutely. But do not use the I word, investors. And they are, when you say silent investor, or no, sorry, when you say silent partner, that means investor. And that means you made promises and they're looking to you as a stockbroker in a sense. It just happens to be real estate. And if you lose their money, you're going to get in trouble. So Matt and I love to use the P word, partners, and set up an LLC and share profits proportionally. Yes, that sounds great. Now, my only little last point is some of you out there might want to set up a big LLC with lots of investors and set up your own little fund. Yeah, we help people do that all the time. It's a securities offering. It's called a PPM. Jerem Bergerson in our office has one on his plate all the time. And people want to raise $500,000 or $1 million and go out and do a bunch of cool stuff. Sure, it's going to cost you some legal fees and you're going to use the I word. But it's a whole different event. So Ryan, partner, give us a call. Let's get on the phone with all your partners, form an LLC. We'll play lawyer. You play real estate guru and everybody's going to be happy and you won't go to jail. Do it right.
Yeah. And we don't play lawyers. We are lawyers. So. Yeah,
that's right. Good point, man.
Yeah. That's like the Rock Dwayne Johnson starring as himself. Okay. Well, I would also just throw out there, we have a, I don't know if you mentioned this, we have an old podcast episode probably in the last year on raising money from others. It goes over this lender, partner, investor dissection and how to do it in the right situation. So give that a listen too if you haven't listened to that show yet. All right. I got a question from Bill. I think it's my turn. Yes. Bill says he's got a business with 5 employees and he's doing a simple IRA plan. The retirement plan questions just keep flying in. Doing a simple IRA plan with a 3% employer match. He says he contributes the max himself, but wants to go all the way up to the $53,000 limit, which is now $56,000, by the way, Bill. He says, can I set up a new S corp with no employees in order to set up a solo K and bill my existing company for consulting services? He was on just kind of calculations on how he could possibly do this.
If only we could wish it so.
Yes, if you could, we would be doing this. I love it. But the IRS thought of this and thought, you know what? That wouldn't be fair to all of Bill's employees. He's going to do some supercharged plan for himself and not match it and put in these generous employer contributions to all of his employees. He's going to leave them over on the simple IRA with the 3% match. So, unfortunately, no. This is called controlled groups, and any of these related companies or companies you own and control, you're not going to be able to offer different retirement accounts. So, the solo K is not a good solution, unfortunately, Bill. So, this next question was about a safe harbor 401k. This is, you're right. You've already thought ahead. This is where you're likely going to have to go. This is even what we do in the law firm, and I self-direct my account out of it. So you can have a safe harbor 401k. You can be putting 19 grand a year in as your own contributions, doing a company match, maybe 4%, you know, between 3% and 5% is how it runs out. Basically, it's 4%. And and you can be throwing in money. Now, if you're over 50, you get to throw in an extra $6,000. So that can be $25,000 plus the match based on your W-2 and wage. But that's the safe harbor. You don't have to match employees, you know, on the 19 or 25. That's all you, and it's coming off of your pay, just like the employees. If they want to put in that 19 to 25, 19 if they're under 50, 25 if they're over 50, they have to put it in off their pay. So the company match is much smaller on the safe harbor. That's why most employers go for that, so they don't go broke doing huge matches for all their employees. But it's a good way to still get 20 plus into your retirement account a year. And it's a very, very common structure now for small and medium-sized businesses. And you can self-direct. Give us a call in the law firm. It's a little tricky on how you pull that off. And you can have Roth accounts. That's another question Bill asks, is can you do Roth? You can have a Roth 401k account within the solo K. It doesn't roll out to a Roth IRA. It's just its own Roth 401k within the Safe Harbor 401k plan. So sorry, the big catch there for everyone is you can't use the solo K if you do have employees. It's not going to work. No matter what other separate companies you try and spin off, it's just not going to work. Now, you may have other partnerships and other companies that you have different owners and have separate lines of business where you have some possibilities, but I don't see it in your situation, Bill.
All right. Now, Matt, I've got to pose this question to you quickly. I think you can answer it quickly. This is from AJ. He said he had an IRA set up under American Pension Services back in the day. Hmm. It got transferred to Equity Trust.
Okay.
A loan was made from the IRA while under APS to an individual who started a business. The business never went anywhere. The loan is in default. It's gone. Hmm. I'm trying to write this off as a bad debt and close the IRA. Now, you don't get a bad debt write-off, but he's
right.
AJ, you're just trying to shut down the IRA so Equity Trust quits billing you. But they won't let me close it. Is this true? What are my alternatives? Well, I think he's past the, it's too late. I don't know, Matt. What would you say to AJ?
Okay. Here's the issue with the IRA custodians. The reason they won't close it is because they don't believe you. I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
What they presume happened is you got paid back and didn't put the money in the IRA and you're trying to get around taking a distribution. That's what the IRA custodians think, and that's what their regulators and people who audit them think when money doesn't come back on a loan. So you have to document this and prove to them that, no, I really didn't get paid back. This guy filed bankruptcy or this company went out of business. Here's the collection letters. I had an attorney send them. You need to create a paper file to show them, no, I really didn't just walk away from a $100,000 loan that my IRA made and I have no paperwork or anything. Okay, you need to document this. So now I know with American Pension Services, you know, who knows where the documents are in terms of at least the note being made, but that's what you're up against really. So it really comes down to a documentation standpoint. You just have to be able to prove it and they need documents to show that. Emails from you or you conversations, they're not going to act on. No matter how much you complain, you need to send documents. So what I would suggest, get the note. See what happened to the borrower? Did they file bankruptcy? Did the company go out of business? Did you hire a lawyer to chase them down or a collection agency? Show them paperwork that shows that you tried to chase this down and collect it. Otherwise, they're going to think the worst and that you just took the money and took an unfair distribution, essentially.
Yeah. And sometimes, AJ, it takes literally filing a court case and getting a default judgment, which would be a slam dunk. And you may say, well, this is a friend. I don't want to take him to court. Well, if they didn't pay you back and you never show that you tried to collect it, that's anyway, whatever. Okay.
Yeah. And you shouldn't have to go to court. When I've had to resolve many of these over the years, particularly at Equity Trust, but even with other custodians, and it's an issue. Even if your IRA was with us, I'd be asking the same things, quite honestly. You have an unpaid note. You want to get written off on your account. I want to know, why didn't this person pay you back? You got to show me. Did they file bankruptcy? Why are you not chasing them down? How come you didn't hire a collection lawyer to go after them? We want to know that, and we want documentation. So I've had others, even a prior client at Equity Trust, they went and hired a lawyer, a collection lawyer, paid a couple, you know, hours of billable time for the lawyer to send some nasty letters, do a little skip trace, try to find the person, and then the lawyer basically wrote a 3-sentence letter saying, "Here's the efforts we did. Can't reach the person. We think they're uncollectible." there. That's what equity trust wants to see. They'll close out the investment if they get that.
I like it. Okay, let's change topics here to small business owner here. Jay says in Tucson, says, as my business is starting to grow, I'm at the stage where I will soon need to hire my first part-time employees. If things continue to grow, I could be hiring full-time employees within the next year. What are some important things to consider, like payroll, health insurance, et cetera, for my part-time versus full-time employees? This is such a good question, Jay. And you know, I had a text from a client of mine who's been quite successful over the years. And he texted me over the weekend and said, Mark, I've got an employee that is stealing clients from me and started a business on the side and thinks that they don't know what they're doing, that I don't know what they're doing. And he was so frustrated. He goes, what are my options? So Jay, you've got a lot of things to consider, and this is exciting, and I'm glad that you emailed us this question. So everybody out there, and Jay, when you start to hire your employees, one of the first things to do is have an employee handbook. And you may even have an employee contract where you can fire them anytime you want, but you'll have in there a non-compete, meaning they can't steal your clients, a non-disclosure, meaning they can't share company private information with others, how much you're going to pay them, that you can fire them anytime you want, and they can quit anytime they want, and what you're promising. What are you promising when it comes to time off, sick pay, days off, and all that? And we have, as you can imagine, as a law firm, multiple little employee handbooks and agreements that you can use and tailor to your situation. So for everybody out there, you may go, oh my gosh, I don't have any of that with my employees. Well, you know, the clearer you are on your relationship with your employees, the better. So that's one of the first things, is to have an employee handbook, employee policies and provisions, and can they bring guns onto the property? Can they come to work drunk? And, you know, I mean, just anything, you know, usually there's
our holidays, you know, what is the sick and vacation policy? Is it use it or lose it? Does it roll over? Yeah. You know, does it pay out when I quit? All things, you've got to be in that. So when you're hiring, you know, you may not think of those things up front, but going through the process of the employee handbook, which one of the attorneys can, you know, draft one in your situation and go over how you want to do it, make some general recommendations, I think is huge, huge. Plus also protecting your customer information and stuff about that. And, you know, that shouldn't be shared. And it's really important.
Yeah. And some of you that have employees now and you've never done that, give us a call. We'll show you how to roll it out and make it effective, including, again, non-competes and non-disclosures.
Yeah, and payroll. Non-solicit, I'd say, too. That's probably the non-compete is nice, but a lot of times that's not enforced very well in the courts.
Yeah.
But the non-solicit is, which would be more like the situation where the person's raiding your clients. That is going to be enforced. Courts will definitely enforce that. So the non-solicit is, hey, you can't solicit.
Yes.
Our customers, you can't go solicit other coworkers you work with in my company to go, you know, start your own business. So those are going to be enforced. But non-compete, where it's like, you can't compete against us in general, you know, and we're in the, you know, whatever, the landscaping, we're a landscaping business. You can't do landscaping in, you know, Arizona. Well, that's not going to get enforced. But I can restrict you from going after our customers and our business for landscaping in Arizona.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Great distinction, Matt. And we have documents that are called non-disclosure, non-solicit, non-compete. They're kind of all together. And you throw it in there, even if you can't enforce every piece of it, it does scare the people away from trying to pull any shenanigans. Another important legal word, shenanigans. So keep that in mind. Now, just a couple other quick thoughts.
We're against shenanigans. So
yeah. When it comes to payroll, people out there, everybody try not to cut corners and go, well, I'm just going to pay him as a subcontractor, but they look like an employee, act like an employee, work like an employee, use all your crap like an employee. You order them around like an employee. Well, a duck's a duck. You know, if they look like an employee and do all those things, then they're an employee. Pony up, get your workers' comp set up, payroll service. You can use national companies, an accounting firm like ours. We've got payroll services. You can use a QuickBooks type service, but get familiar with what your payroll options are and treat them like an employee. You don't want them getting hurt on the job and having workers' comp issues. Next, health insurance. If you have part-time employees or even full-time employees, you don't have to provide health insurance until you have the equivalent of 50 full-time employees. That's the rule. So don't feel like you have to throw down health insurance. You might want to retain employees and provide benefits so you can better recruit, but you don't have to. So get your payroll done, get an employee handbook. Don't stress about health insurance unless you want to. Same thing like that 401k Matt was talking about with Bill just a minute ago. If you want to do a 401k, cool, do it, but you don't have to. You just have to follow the rules when you do open that can of worms. And so start studying and reading up on it. Our show last week on how to be a good boss was a good one. Get some books on it and some podcasts on, and we've got articles on being an employer. So Jay, yeah, study up and you'll know real quick what you need to be doing.
Okay. I don't know. We're kind of getting to the end of the hour here.
Yeah. A couple more questions here.
You got more?
Yeah. You want to do one more and I'll do one more.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, this is, I had two questions from two different Bills. So this is Bill number two, or maybe Bill Jr. here. Okay. Okay. This is Bill. Bill asked, he says he wants to loan money to a real estate backed project with some personal cash and self-directed IRA funds into the same deal. And he says, I understand I can do this if I do it concurrently. Do you have to earn the same return on each of these loans? What if there's equity participation on the deal? Okay, this is a great question, Bill. So if you're going to loan on something from your personal funds, like maybe there's a deal that needs 200 grand and you're like, you know what? I've got 100 grand in my IRA. I could self-direct and throw into this deal. And I got 100 grand in my personal checking account or, you know, investment account I could do. And so I could throw in 100,000 personal money and 100,000 IRA money. And I could fund this $200 loan. Now, if you're doing that, you have to be very careful on this. The easiest way to do this is you can put it right on the note that, you know, the lender is Matt Sorensen as to a 50% interest and directed trust company, FBO, Matt Sorensen IRA as to a 50% interest. And I'm going to put in half the money personally and my IRA is going to put in the other half the money and it's going to fund the deal. Now, it doesn't have to be 50-50, but you know what I mean? It's like if it's 200 grand and I put in, you know, it's going to be based on the dollars coming in, right? So I did 100 and 100. So we broke it up 50-50. So the documentation is going to show that I'm going to need to fund this at a similar time or, you know, within 30 days, I got to be funding it kind of at the same, it's the same deal, right? And I'm getting the same return. So unfortunately, Bill, you can't say, well, I'd rather get a 6% return on my personal funds and a 12% return on my IRA funds. The borrower is willing to pay 8%. So I'll just send 6% to me personally and 12% to my IRA. No, you can't do that. The same deal your IRA is getting is the same deal you're personally going to get. You can't treat one or the other differently. They're making the same investment, taking the same risk. It'd be prohibited for you to try and, you know, create some different payment structure where one's paid differently than the other. The only way you can get away with that is based on dollars invested, right? The IRA puts more money in, the IRA is going to get more money back, obviously, because it put more money in. But the same works even on equity participation. So if there's an equity kicker on it, maybe you're loaning to someone rehabbing a property and they're going to give you a 10, 20% return on the flip of the property of the profits plus some interest. That let's say it's a 20% return on the flip, 10% of that, half's going to go to your IRA, half's going to go to you personally. So it's just got to be straight up, but you can definitely co-invest the IRA funds and personal funds together. One thing you cannot do, you cannot loan first personally, and then 6 months later, they're like, I need more money. Can you do a second loan? And you're like, I don't have any more money, but I'll loan you money for my IRA because I got more money in my IRA. No. You can't do that because now your IRA is loaned money that's helping protect your personal investment. And what happens if there's a default? Does your IRA get wiped out in second position to help benefit you personally? Now we got you guys, your IRA and you personally in different positions, tons of conflicts. Lots of self-dealing and privileged transaction issues. So just make sure if you're putting those two sets of funds together, or even your IRA, wife's IRA, for example, you're going in at the same time, breaking up based on dollars invested.
Whew, boy, man.
That was a good one to end on, though. That was a good question.
Yeah, that Matt Sorensen's in. I don't know. I got one more to end on, but thank you, everybody, for listening. This is so good. And one last question here, but you know, the trick to building wealth and living the American dream is education. It really is. And hopefully this show is a huge part of your learning process of being more successful. So we're grateful you're here with us.
And I'll say this too. I love the questions because you see people are out there doing it, right? They're not just learning and getting educated. They're getting after it. They're doing it. They're putting deals together. They're trying to figure it out. These are like not hypothetical questions. As you can tell from these questions, these are people doing it. Like they're in the process of doing it or they're planning it, you know? So I love how it all comes together. That's what's fun for me.
I love it. Well, here we have Sean asking a question, who's a fellow accountant. And this is kind of technical, and this is a fair question. This is good for everybody to know. He says, I have a client that has a multi-member LLC, and they buy like one property each year, fix it up, and sell it. They are large projects. My question is, are all the costs, including the purchase price of the home, recorded on the tax return? And how are things handled once the property is sold? Non-depreciable asset until sold? ? Also, if I depreciated the construction cost already on their first return, how do I reverse that on the next one? Okay, so here's the point for everybody listening. When you do a fix and flip, especially if you're just one or three or 10, if you're doing a fix and flip, all of the costs, including the purchase price, the improvements, and any direct costs go towards basis. There is no write-off on your tax return until you sell it. So let me give an example. Let's say you buy a fix and flip in October, and you buy it and you start fixing it up, and you bought it for $100,000 and you've already put $30,000 into it. And this was in 2018, last year. When you go to do your tax return, do you get a write-off for $130,000 or anything at all? No. You just put on the balance sheet, I bought it for $100,000, I put $30,000 into it, and I'm still working on it, and I'm going to flip it. There's no depreciation. There's nothing. It's a work in progress. Then you get it, turn the corner into the new year in 2019. You put $20,000 more into it, and now you're into it $150,000, and now you sell it. So that means you've got $150,000 in, you're selling it for $200,000, and you have $50,000 in profit. Then you have short-term capital gain, and you're off to the races. Now, we might have some other operational costs that are a write-off in other areas of your business life, and this is where things can get complex. But truly, if you are only fixing and flipping, and that's your only business operation, all of your costs are going towards that building until it is sold. And finally, Sean, if you did put depreciation on the return, when you sell it this year, you're going to recapture it. Don't go back and try to amend the return. Just recapture it as depreciation, 25% rate, get it off the books, and this year do it the proper way with it all just being an asset until sold. Whew. Matt, do you want to take us out? Give everybody a challenge. Give them a reminder. We got our summit coming up.
Well, that's right. The Self-Directed IRA Summit is going to be June 8th in Chicago, August 10th in Hawaii. The June 8th one is virtual. Go to sdrasummit.com. Early bird special is expiring soon, so get over there and sign up. Mark and I will both be there. It's going to be the in-depth time. For those of you that are all sending in these self-directed IRA questions, that's the place to be, man. And then also, please go to iTunes or Stitcher or Google Podcasts or wherever I don't even know all these places where the show goes, but I know there's people finding it in lots of places. Give us a review. 5 stars is preferred. I mean, if you got any hate mail, please send them to mark@markjkohler.com. And thanks so much for listening to the show and sharing it. We love coming on and sharing this information. Hopefully you find it valuable. If you've made it this long, that means you kind of liked it. Not going to lie. So give us 5 stars. You're still there. We'll see you next week, of course.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.